Whenever one of my cousins have a baby, my mom would tell them to make a long and narrow pillow and loosely fill it with rice. She tells them to drape this pillow over the belly of the baby when the baby's sleeping to mimic the hand, the weight of a parent's hand, so the baby would feel safe and secure. She swears by this magical pillow. Apparently, there is now a product that is a weighted blanket for grown-ups. So as much as humans want and need the freedom to cut loose and fly, we never quite outgrow our need for security, that feeling of a protective hand on us, anchoring us, assuring us all is well. That's the beginning of Psalm 125, a song of ascent. It captures this feeling of a security blanket. Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be shaken but endures forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people, both now and forevermore. So as the Jewish people climb the hill up towards the temple and prepare to worship God, they sing this as a celebration of God's reassuring hand on them, that from God's home, Zion, God surrounds Jerusalem with his presence. They're watched over like reassuring arms, wrapping them up in a hug. They can sleep like a baby, feeling God's hand on them, all is well. Now, scholars believe the psalm is a mashup. That declarative first verse of God with them is combined with a second verse written later when Israel had been invaded by a foreign power. The temple and the city wall have been destroyed. The people scattered to faraway outposts of this alien empire. And they suspect there's a third verse that had gone missing. The Jewish people have had it. being ruled over. And the second verse is a prayer for God to chase out the barbarians before they take matters into their own hands. The scepter of the wicked will not remain over the land allotted to the righteous, for then the righteous might use their hands to do evil. Lord, do good to those who are good, to those who are upright in heart, but those who turn to crooked ways, the Lord will banish with the evildoers. Peace be on Israel. So by the time the psalm was written into the prayer book, the song of ascent was no longer just about that safety they were feeling with God, but a stubborn hanging on to what they believe God still is, what they still need God to be when it doesn't seem like it or feel like it. And this worship song becomes a song about faith. It's sailors putting their sight on the fixed points in the stars when they are lost at sea in order to reestablish their bearing. The psalmist, in a time of confusion and distress and maybe even doubt, returns to what science teachers call first principles, the things we know for sure, that even though it doesn't look it or feel it, God is still in control. I don't know about you, but I've been reading less news because it's all very unsettling. This no end in sight pandemic is unsettling. Afghanistan is unsettling. This Haiti, Myanmar, places in Africa with 35% unemployment. This month, for the first time ever, the highest point in Iceland saw rain instead of snow. There's a supply chain problem shipping goods from one place to another. And that's partly why things are suddenly crazy expensive. And some analysts are saying the stock market is a giant bubble about ready to burst. The world feels so unsafe. We want to crawl under a weighted blanket if we had one. And there are even experts saying that these are imminent signs of the collapse of Western civilization, that they have seen this before. Every time when empires that ruled half the world suddenly crumbled and fell. They say the unraveling of civilization begins with a breakdown of trust between people and government. We saw this last January, that riot at the American Capitol by people who refused to accept the results of their election. It was unnerving watching the frightened politicians locking themselves in as people rampage outside their doors. Now, if we older folks are worried about the future, imagine being 18 or 22, trying to make big decisions about life and career. Listen to this bit of dialogue from a Chinese drama I saw recently. It's a gifted teenager and his mentor, and they're talking about making a go at becoming a professional chess player. "How do I decide?" the boy says. "I want to say I decided to play chess and I will never regret it, but I cannot say this because whether I will regret it or not, I will not know it for a long time, maybe several years or decades or really, really long time before I will know if my decision was right or wrong." That's a good question. How do we make life decisions when the world is a moving target and we don't know what to expect one day to the next? When this American professor analyzed the data of the people charged on the Capitol riot, he discovered something surprising, that the majority of the rioters were not poor people, not neo-Nazis, not the usual troublemakers, but upper middle class business owners. And these people tell the researchers that they joined the riot on that day because they believed other people, Blacks and Hispanics, were gaining more rights faster than they were. They thought they were being treated unfairly by their country. Kate Bowler, in her book, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I Loved, says the language of fairness is the language of entitlement. The rioters rioted because they were angry at the government for unfair treatment. This happens in our relationship with God too, I think, which is what Bowler writes about. That if we think a relationship with God entitles us to a life free of troubles and anxieties, when life doesn't feel like what we expect, we will mount a spiritual riot. We might get angry at God, or we might even walk away. So recently, I spent a couple of days grumbling at God. It started with some experience of unfair treatment at home, and it snowballed into a pity party. But thinking about the psalm made me evaluate exactly what I'm entitled to from God. And in the end, after a little tantruming, I decided I wasn't really entitled to my grumbling, because the slight I experienced was really nothing compared to how good I have it. There are a lot of grumbling psalms, and this psalm could have been combined with verses that accused God of being unfair. The psalmist's country had collapsed, brought on by barbarians he thought were way more sinful than his own people ever were. But yet, the psalmist shows us what he does. When his insides feels like he's lost at sea, he turns to what he knows, first principles, and he reestablishes his bearings and waits out the storm. He reminds himself that God is still in control, even if he can't see it or feel it. Jerry Bridges was a writer with the Navigators, and in his book, Trusting God Even When Life Hurts, he tells a story of how when he was 14 years old, his mother collapsed in the next room and died. His older brother was not home at the time, and his father was an emotional wreck. So at 14, he ran into the next room, and it fell on him to manage this crisis moment in his family. And he said he never really got over this his entire life. In his book, he asks, where is God in all this? Where is God when your whole world falls apart around you? So he talks about obey versus trust. He says, when God clearly tells us what to do, like the Ten Commandments and other clear instructions in the Bible, we obey. There was an article written recently that says it's entitled, "The West Has Lost Its Virtue." It doesn't sound to me like the author is religious, but he traces the chaos of the world that we're seeing as a result of Western society cutting loose from Judeo-Christian values, which he calls old taboos. The world wants to be free from someone else telling them how to live, but the price of complete unguided freedom is chaos. It's astronauts marooned in the void of open space without that safety tether to the spaceship. And this is what the writer says. The vacuum created by the collapse of our old taboos was filled with the poisonous gas of consumer capitalism. It has now infiltrated every aspect of our lives in ways that the Christian story once did, so much so that we barely even notice as it colonizes everything. From the way we eat to the values we teach our children, cut loose in a postmodern present with no center, no truth, no direction, we have not become independent-minded, responsible, democratic citizens in a human republic. We have become slaves to the self and to the power of money, broken worshipers before the monstrous idol of progress. So freedom needs to be tethered to something virtuous to help us find the balance between what is good for me and what is good for my neighbor. And that's the Ten Commandments. People were free to advance their own well-being, but it would be an abuse of freedom to take their neighbor's life or their wife or their stuff or their reputation. So Jerry Bridger says, when God tells us clearly what to do, we obey. But when we feel lost at sea because everything is scary and unclear and there are no clear instructions, he says, we trust. We trust when we don't understand, and we reestablish our bearings in what we know, like what J.I. Packer calls the unceasing activity of God, sustaining and governing, working out his purposes, that God never stops paying attention. He never gets distracted or goes on vacation or just gives up on running the world. And sometimes God's activities may include things that we may not welcome into our lives, but adverse events are not evidence of God's absence or inattentiveness, because God never stops caring about us and his creation. In dark, unsettling times, and we feel lost at sea, we go back to what we know. When we first moved to Vancouver and my parents were trying to figure out the streets, a friend taught them, just look for the mountains. It's always north. Then the number streets run east-west and the name streets run north-south. And we started with Cambie. So that's how my parents found their way around, always looking up at the mount for the mountains, because it's always north. One time, my uncle tried to drive a visiting friend to somewhere, I think New Westminster, and he got really, really lost. So after circling and circling around for a long time, he decided to just start over from somewhere he knew. So somehow he found his way back to Oak Ridge Mall and started over. Okay, we laugh about that now, but sometimes that's just the way to do it. Start over with what we know. So Rick Warren, who is so much better at pithy alliteration than I am, offers us three P's as the fixed points of our faith: God's presence, God's promise, and God's purpose. So we have that story of Jesus in the boat with his disciples when they encountered a storm. The disciples freaked out and accused Jesus of not caring if they drowned, which goes to show that it is possible to be really scared even when Jesus is right there with us in body, and with them in body, and we don't even have that. But regardless of how freaked out we are feeling, The point of that story is that God is in the boat with them, and the storm answers to him, like God is present with us. He never leaves us. He's got the storm handled. Secondly, God always keeps his promise to us to look after us. And so Rick Warren writes this, God says this to you. You may lose the cargo. You may lose the tackle of the ship. You may lose the ship. You may even get wet. But you are going to make it because of the promise of God. And thirdly, God has a purpose for us and the world. We believe God, as creator, is rescuing his creation. Everything he does is rescue. We may not know how current events fit in the big arc of history, and it may be a while before we see what that is. So we just need to wait it out. The 12th to 15th century was a very dark period in our history. The church has split into East and West, and people had given up trying to fix it. There were wars and power struggles and the bubonic plague that took 60% of the world's population everywhere. But out of that darkness spurred a rethinking about medicine, from medieval magic and folklore to science, and the restructuring of society about how to pay people better for work and creating social support for the poor. And in some way, that dark period was the fertilizer for new thinking, like the reformation of the Christian church, the printing press, and exploration of new worlds. A scientist in Italy dealing with COVID said recently that at that time, the Black Death, really marks the end of the Middle Ages and the beginning of something else. Not in the number of dead, but in terms of shaking up the way people think. And that something else was the Renaissance. Recently, I saw this Zoom interview of a young actor in the Philippines. So he was asked how he got into acting. And the interviewers were surprised when he said he was actually training in college to become a professional tennis player. But he was in an accident that involved an 18-wheeler, and it injured his leg badly. So after 2 years of intensive physiotherapy, he was told he could never compete again. His story was so sad, it made the news, but it happened that this talent scout saw him on TV and reached out to him and launched him into this new career. So one of the interviewers said, yes, everything happened for a reason. And even she knew as soon as she said this, that it sounded wrong. So this other interviewer tried to rescue the conversation saying, oh, it's a blessing in disguise. Then he says, oh, no, not that getting hit by an 18-wheeler is a blessing. It's not. And pointing out possible silver linings is not something to say to someone when they're in pain. Even if it is true that there's going to be a silver lining, it doesn't make the suffering any less painful. And they may likely be years before we know the reason, once we're through the worst of it. I don't think God makes us suffer on purpose just so he could surprise us with a blessing. That would be cruel. I have been through some painful stuff that I would gladly pass up, even though I have grown through them and good have come out of bad. What I think God does is to help us hang on by refocusing on the fixed points of our faith, which not only helps us outlast the suffering, but shows us how to cooperate with the God spirit and let God turn our adversity into fruit. And in time, that we discover once again that one of God's businesses is to turn the crappy things that happen to us into fertilizer for fruit and blessing, not just for us, but for the people around us. What the psalmist was hanging in and waiting for through his dark times that he could not ever have guessed in his wildest imagination was that the messy of his world would be the backdrop of God coming to earth in the person of Jesus. So maybe eventually we might just finally be let in on the new things God is doing through our current mess. So a few days ago, I saw this guy. I don't know who he is. he told a story on Facebook. His name is Tom. I think he's a realtor. He tells a story about his dad feeling very depressed in the world in 1969. America was torn up over the Vietnam War. The two Kennedys, Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X, were assassinated one after another. There were two serial killers on the loose. And even though his dad had lived through the Depression era, he had completely lost faith in humanity. So one Sunday, Tom and his dad were driving from LA to Oakland when the car broke down outside Bakersfield. They had no money and everything was closed. Along came this cowboy in a pickup truck. He pulled over and offered to give him a ride. And his dad told the guy, but he had no money. And the cowboy said, that's okay. So when they got into town, the cowboy made his friend, the mechanic, open up the shop. And then also the guy who ran the auto parts store. And the whole time, the dad kept reminding these people he had no money to pay for repairs. The cowboy not only paid for everything, he even had his wife cook them a nice dinner before sending them back on their way on the road. And that night, Tom's dad came into his room and said, no matter what you see in the papers or on TV, that's how people really are. So keep the faith. And then a month later, he says, Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. That cowboy is what Rollheiser calls a midwife for hope. And that's our part in God's purpose in the world. Rollheiser writes this. When a baby is born, normally the head pushes its way through the birth canal first, opening up the way for the body to follow. A good midwife can be very helpful at this time, doing everything from giving support, through giving reassurances, through giving instruction, through teaching us how to breathe, through actively helping to pull the new life through the birth canal. Her help can sometimes mean the difference between life and death, and it always makes the birth easier and healthier. That's true, too, for trust and hope. And one of the things a midwife of hope needs to do is what Jesus did when he met people, women and men alike, after his resurrection. He sent them back to Galilee, where he promised they would refine their hope and trust. What is Galilee? In the Gospels, Galilee is more than a geographical place. It's a place of the heart, the place of falling in love, of first fervor, of being inflamed with high ideals, of walking on water because one is naive and trustful enough to believe that this is possible. Galilee is this place we were before our hearts and ideals got crucified, the place inside us where trust and hope are gestated. Somewhere in life, we lose the child in us and lose too the trust and hope that go with that. It's a painful struggle to give birth to trust again. And in that struggle, a midwife of hope, someone who believes in the resurrection, can indeed be a wonderful friend. So for Christians, because our faith is anchored in God's love for his creation, that God remains in control and God is present with us, we have the hope we need to help us survive the hard times. And more than survive, our mission is the midwife hope for people who are looking for something virtuous to hang their hope on. So that in time, we will discover how hard times can become the fertilizer that grows new fruit. I'll give you a moment to start a conversation with God, and then I'll read you Malcolm Guite. Malcolm Guite, Psalm 125. This linked corona for my Lord and King, this daily woven wreath of little flowers I lay before you as an offering. In thankfulness for mercy, all my powers of expression, my delight in words are gifts that come from you. The idle hours that give me time to find and weave these words all flow to me from you and all my trust is in your steadfast love. The singing birds that flit from branch to branch and make their nests safe in the cedars, these all look to you as I do, and with me, you give them rest. We flitter on the winds of time, but you stand steadfast as the hills because you rise beyond all change. We find our peace in you. Amen.